And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, not just any, not just one of the million, but the Motorcycle Road Racing Podcast.
That was good, Michael Gugis.
You know what? And I appreciate the kind words, Ed Sorbo.
Sweet 16.
That's episode 16?
Yeah, because we just did 15, so now we're on 16.
Episode 16 and still nothing from Hickory Farms. What are we doing wrong?
We need to send the show directly to them.
Exactly.
We'll have to look up their email, info@hickoryfarms.com.
I'm running their stickers on my bike. I don't know why they haven't gotten back to me.
I have some more Hickory Farms sausage and cheese from Rich Oliver's Mystery School last night while playing a computer game.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
God damn it, the life is good.
It is.
Like that?
Yeah, it's you tough know? To be angry and sad and, well, and all that stuff.
Playing a video game, eating meat and cheese? Hell yeah, man.
The carnivore life.
Oh, man. There's a great Chinese restaurant near my house. Here's what's hysterical about it, okay? They
only came here to build railroads, you know.
Well, they've gotten very good. Somebody needed to feed them because that's what they're telling you. The sweet old Chinese ladies who stand behind the counter use a microphone to call the order into the room, which is 8 feet away. Okay, they could walk over there.
Gotta use technology,
man. They could walk over there. They could shout, but they've got this beat up, duct taped together mic, and she picks it up like a DJ. One order fried wontons. I'm expecting her to do a mic drop and walk off the stage.
So you gotta reach over and grab the mic, and you know what you gotta say?
What?
What? You don't know.
No, I have no
cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger. Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi. Come on.
So I'm sitting in this crappy Chinese restaurant last night eating the best tangerine chicken in the world. And I'm thinking, man, you know what? Not a bad way to spend a couple of moments on a Saturday night. I want to tell you one of my favorite stories involving a kid on a racetrack.
Please do.
I think this is just wonderful.
The kid on a motorcycle on a racetrack or just laying on the track?
Well, no, he was not laying on the track at the time, although, you know.
Well, you said on the track.
We're racers. We've all spent our time laying. I feel pretty. right? How's he doing? He thinks he's Ethel Merman. He's fine. I don't know why I thought about this.
You know, that's a good idea.
What?
We should all have pre-programmed wise-ass answers
to the corner workers
when they come running up to you. Be like, they're going to put you in the ambulance anyway.
Exactly.
They might as well think you've lost your mind.
Exactly. Well, it's not whether they put you into the ambulance, Ed. It's whether they let you out.
I actually did that. I high-sided myself to the moon chasing Greg Esser.
Okay.
Which happened more than once.
Ah!
After a while, you start to like, you know what? Greg Esser's pretty fast.
Maybe I shouldn't
go smoking right by him. Right. So I high-sided myself. How high did I high-side myself?
How high did you go, Ed?
Pike's Peak.
Right.
So there's less gravity there because you're farther from the center of the earth.
And less air resistance because of the air.
So I went up in the air. I landed flat on my back.
So bullshit.
And bounced up off my back and landed on my hands and knees. That's a pretty serious high-side, right?
Right.
So then I crawled off the racetrack and I wasn't feeling pretty, as you say. And I got my earplugs in and my helmet on and the world's noisy and I'm kind of amped.
Right.
Corner worker comes running up to me and he looks at me. You okay? And I go, did you fucking see that? I should get a fucking t-shirt for that high side. And his eyes got all big and I thought, you know what? Maybe I'm yelling.
Maybe I shouldn't be yelling at this man.
You could see the imprint of my back protector on my back.
Sweet.
For a day after that crash.
That's freaking awesome.
That was a good high
Although I think we owe an apology to all of the science teachers who listen to this, who are screaming at us, there's no difference in the gravity.
There is. The farther you are from the center of the earth.
I know that, but the distance is so
the
minimal.
The difference from the equator
right.
to the pole is 0.5% because of the distance, because the earth is wider at the equator because it's centrifugal force.
Right. So how far is the distance at Pike's Peak? It's 6,000 feet. It's a mile in the air.
It's a measurable. It's really small. It don't make any difference in the height of the arc. It's just fun to say it.
Got it.
It's also great to call it low Earth orbit when you go high side.
We shouldn't apologize to the science teachers, and we should apologize to the engineers who are losing their minds going, functionally, it makes no difference.
Tell them to figure out the answer to my time clock question, and then they'll keep them busy.
What was the joke about the naked woman and the mathematician and the engineer? Remember? You take it.
Yeah, something about, and the answer is, I didn't notice I was looking at the girl, but the engineer
no,
would.
No.
Oh.
Okay.
How, you can.
This is jokes for intellectuals. an engineer and a mathematician are placed in a room across the room from a naked woman. We're assuming that they're both attracted to the naked women, no matter what gender they are. And the operator of the experiment says, every day you get to move half the distance from where you are to the naked woman. The mathematician says, I'll never actually make it there, and storms out of the room. And in a huff, the engineer goes, soon enough, I'm going to be close enough that it doesn't make a difference. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Tip your waitress. Enjoy the veal.
I thought so, the first time you told it, the engineer is the guy who leaves. The mathematician is the one who says it won't matter after a little while.
No.
Okay, whatever.
Right?
We had a topic for this show.
Right.
By the way, I started the clock late.
That's fine. So, let's go back to talking about kids.
That's right. You were going to talk about a kid who was on a racetrack.
Yes, I don't know why I was thinking about this story. And it involves, of course, me winning a race. So that always makes me happy, right?
What other stories are worth remembering?
That's what I'm saying, right? Either that or the low Earth orbit, low gravity, low air resistance, high side. It was one of the solo races.
I only remember that story because it was beat into me.
Yeah, right? You literally carried the marks of that story on you for a while. It was one of the solo races, middle of the summer, Willow Springs, and I had won the race, and so I was feeling really good about life. There's a kid named Andrew Artola. He was out there, and he's been racing for a long time, and he was on a 125, and he, I think it might have been his first solo race. He'd used to six lappers, little bikes, right?
Is it time to stop yet?
Exactly. Please, when can I get off of this thing? But he stuck it out, you know? And we were getting off the track, came over turn six, and we're going through seven, and I caught up to him as we're, pulling off the track. And I reached over and I patted him on the back as we were going down the back straight. I don't know why. But that made me just, that's one of those moments that just makes you feel really good about everything having to do with racing.
Excellent.
You know, that was just.
The kid's probably like, some guy whacked me on the back.
Exactly.
Because the speed difference is not as small as you think it is.
It's not about him, Ed. It's about me.
I'm sorry.
And how it made me, Michael Gugis, feel.
How could I forget such a fact?
Excellent.
I know
right?
It's about me.
Exactly. You know, it's, well, never mind. We don't want to get into who we actually are. Because that would cause Neil Tyson.
DeGrasse Tyson.
To call Mike Tyson.
Yes.
And say, go find Ed Sorbo and Michael Gugis to give them a lesson in physics.
He has a t-shirt out now. It's got a coffee cup with a picture of the galaxy in it. He goes, I love the smell of the universe in the morning.
Yeah. I like the idea of Mike Tyson teaching you.
That was a great movie.
About momentum and a body, an object at rest tends to stay at rest until a force acts upon it. Mike Tyson
so
says,
Tyson
let me explain to you something about force. All right, Ed, you had an inspirational story. Let's see if you can live up to either the engineer who's chasing the naked woman or the story about the kid.
It's more in the category of what Laura Wong said about me.
Who's Laura Wong?
Laura's a chick that used to race motorcycles in Hawaii.
Now
she's living the dream, traveling around the world in a small sailboat with her husband.
Cool.
And her description of me is, Ed, people are like helium-filled balloons. They're always trying to float up into the stratosphere.
Meaning.
And you're the string pulling them back to earth.
Ha!
So on Facebook,
I have a friend of mine who calls me a fun sponge. I like that.
I prefer to say that I view reality as it is.
Yeah,
and
it's better
if you know. So somebody on Facebook who's a Facebook friend of mine, and by the way, I'm mad at Facebook for destroying the word friend.
Oh.
But that's a separate topic.
You could have just stopped after I'm mad at Facebook.
That would be like the people who are just mad at Starbucks. Like, for what? I'm sorry, they're making money selling coffee.
Exactly.
They're ruining
right?
the world. It's all their fault.
No,
anyway.
Facebook is, the work of Satan. But that's neither here nor there. Go on.
Progressively wound springs are the work of Satan. Facebook comes nowhere near as bad as that. So this person asks a question about, going racing. His picture
right.
shows him. He's got a novice number plate. He's riding a bike somewhere.
Okay.
And I don't know who the guy is. He's just a Facebook friend. And I forget the exact question, but it led me to answer the question along the lines of, I started AMA pro racing when I was 35.
Right.
And so he's blown away because he's only ever heard you know, all the stories about kids. You got to start when you're two.
Right.
Right? And exactly. You can't, right? Okay. So that's surprising fact number one for him. And then the next question is something that leads me to explain, look, I was living in Hawaii, and one day I decided I could do it. Now, the catalyst was my friend Bill Wickersham said to me, you should go do this. He actually said, you should rent your house to Nancy, who was this person I had met, who was a reliable person who would rent my house and not destroy it.
Okay.
Okay? Which is important, right?
Yeah, right.
You should race your TZ in the AMA 250, and you should coach Chris Ulrich.
Okay.
And so what I ended up doing was renting my house to Nancy, racing my AMA, my TZ in the AMA 250 class.
Right.
Being the coordinator for John's Team Hammer School at the time.
Right.
And coaching Chris a little bit, working with him. You know, it wasn't like I was really coaching him lots of stuff, but there was another pair of eyes there.
Got it.
He didn't need my help very much. The difference between me the day before and the day after that decision was only the decision.
Of course.
I didn't have any more skills. I didn't have any more money. Nothing. I just decided I could do it. That was the point of my post to the guy. Is the thing that makes it possible is you deciding to do it. And then the details are, look, it's just like driving to Daytona. You can't drive to Daytona. Just like you can't fly to the moon. It's too far. First, you drive to Phoenix.
Right.
From Phoenix, you drive to the border of Texas. Then you drive all the way across Texas. The sun has risen. The sun has set. Here I am in Texas yet. Then you can drive to Daytona from the far border of Texas. It's the same thing with going to the moon, right? First, you build a rocket that gets you into Earth orbit.
Right.
From there, you go a translunar orbit, blah, 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 blah. So you got to make it in steps. So my point was, you can do it. You just got to break it down. And this specific example, if you want to go pro racing, is work until you become a fast club guy.
Right.
From the fast club guy level, you go to Weira National Racing.
Right.
You pick a couple. You do a few of them. You build up. Then you go to your first AMA pro race. You just do one or two. You don't do the whole series. Once you've built up those skills and all the other, then maybe you can try to do a whole series.
And you judge yourself at each level. Am I good enough to do this?
Yeah, you know what? Good doesn't necessarily matter. Just that you have the resources to keep going.
That's kind of what I mean, you know?
You got to be good enough to qualify.
Right.
You know, preferably you don't get lapped.
You have to have the resources to get there without losing your job, et cetera, so forth.
Exactly, right? And so it's a long process.
But it's a decision to do anything. That's how you accomplish anything in life.
Yeah, people who climb mountains, they got day jobs back at home. They save up their money. Then they quit that job while they go for 6 months, climb Mount Everest, come back, whatever. So you find a way to do it. Everybody finds a slightly different way, right? I did the build up my riding and mechanicking skills and go directly at it. Bruce Lynn got the big job at Boeing, earned a lot of money, took all, he's got, 2 weeks of vacation. So he takes this weekend plus Friday and Monday and he does it that way.
I learned how to write.
Exactly.
And
so you
then,
choose the job choice you make is partially based on what else you want to do in your life.
Absolutely.
So you keep making choices that make racing possible, and pretty soon they build up to where
racing's
you're
possible.
Fucking doing it.
Exactly.
Right.
You know?
Okay. So the point of all this was
there's a point.
Yeah. His last question was after I explained that I started late, the slow step process to get there and do it.
Right.
He said, "Yeah, but how do I do it?" And I said, "You can't."
That seems a little harsh.
He didn't get it.
Because
he thinks it, I mean that he can't because of his situation.
No.
I meant you can't, dude, on Facebook because you don't think you can.
Writing on Facebook does not put you on the grid for a race.
Absolutely. Yeah, get off of Facebook.
Exactly.
Start doing some work. Literally, I firmly believe, I'm a Horatio Alger guy all the way. You want to do it, you put your mind to it, you can do it. Johnny Rock Page can do it, for crying out loud.
I disagree. Just because you decide to do something doesn't mean you can do it. I can decide all I want to be a jockey, and I'm not going to do it.
You know, there's a great Saturday Night Live skit about that where they have this giant guy. He's all happy with his supporters, and he became a jockey. There are some limitations.
Of course.
It's too late now for me to decide to be an Air Force fighter pilot.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's
within
what I'm talking about.
Reasonable constraints.
But there,
if you were born in Somalia, you probably can't race motorcycles.
Yeah, it's probably
true. It sucks
to
be you.
Yes, exactly. On the other hand, we do have, and this is the thing that most people do, they sell themselves short.
That's my point.
They sell themselves short on their ability to accomplish something, and they tell themselves, I can't. rather than find out if they could.
People hate it when I say this to them. Listen carefully.
I'm listening.
Argue for your limitations and you get to keep them.
I hate when you say that.
Right? People spend as much time saying I can't do something.
Right, than trying to find out if they can. And again, you need to know the difference.
Dude, it's way better to try to do something. Man, I didn't make it to the top of that mountain. What does that mean? It means if you want to, you can go back and try again later.
Oh, you got halfway up.
Right? Hey, exactly.
And you know what the other
personal
thing
summit
is?
They call that in the mountaineering world.
And you know
world.
the other thing that's interesting and relevant to racing is that you don't have to invest in an AMA level superbike program to find out whether you can get there.
Yeah.
If you buy a Ninja 250 off of Craigslist for
500 bucks,
right? Go out to your local club and spend another $1,000, you know, with everything that'll get you through your first weekend and realize I freaking hate this.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Then you can stop and go do something
stop
else
right there, right? Yep. You know, it's
and you can probably sell that stuff for a profit or at least not lose much.
Yeah, not lose much.
You know what I gained out of teaching myself to be a mechanic?
A whole career of earning. There you go.
Right? I have skills where I can literally go anywhere in the world and be a useful person. I guarantee you there are broken down cars and motorcycles all over the world. And a guy who can fix them is somebody that people want around.
Absolutely.
Right? They may not be able to pay you much.
I want a good mechanic. You know, I want a good doctor. And I want a good lawyer for reasons that we can't talk about on this podcast. where are we at?
Well, it says 12 minutes. And I started that, I don't know, 4 or 6 minutes late.
Okay. Well, hold on. It'll
Your
say so on here. What does
something.
It say?
Well, let me get my reading glasses.
Freaking reading glasses. God, damn it.
It says 16 minutes.
Okay, excellent. What do we have time for?
So 4 minutes late.
You know what? Let's go ahead and try to wrap this one up in a relatively close to minutes by throwing the two-minute board at the four-minute mark.
Very good.
Okay. Ed, you had a question you were going to ask me.
Yeah, what was it?
It had something to do with a very popular professional racer.
Ah, what is the Melandri quandary?
Ah, the Melandri quandary. Well,
say that fast.
And you got that title by reading my excellent post at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. Is there anybody else we need to plug here?
Well, there's me, le-suspension.com.
Right, if you haven't looked at...
Oh, you know what?
Who?
Lindemann Engineering is a $4,000 sponsor of the Daytona 200.
Contingency sponsor.
And I'm kind of crazy. So I'm paying to everybody.
Right.
80 qualifiers. All you got to do is finish the race according to the club's rules. They say you finished.
Right.
You can get $50 worth of LE bucks.
Right.
So if you have Lindemann work on your bike, forks or shock, and you got the stickers on, and you finish the Daytona 200, right? Which means you traveled all the way over there, you had your shit together, you qualified, you made it through. That's a lot of work.
That's a lot. The least Ed can do for you is
you
give you
$50
bucks.
Credit towards shop work in the future. It's not anything compared to what you're doing, but it's a start, and
you know
I congratulate
what?
You for being there.
Exactly. It's a pat on the back.
Well, plus, it could be, you know, somebody's the only thing they get, right?
Right.
I was the last finisher, but I got $50 from Ed.
$50
Well, not 50 bucks, actually.
I got $50 credit from Ed.
You got to send me money and spend more money, and then you get a discount.
Still, dude, the first time I moved into a podium position on a race that paid money, I thought to myself,
good,
I would happily take human life in order to keep from getting passed back. That was for $20, dude. I was ready to throw. I think I got past JC Gibbs at Big Willow, and dude, he was not coming back past me.
So what is the Melandri quandary?
He might not have come down yet. He's a professional racer.
He is.
And professional racers are occasionally paid to lose. This does not mean they're throwing a fight, but they sign a contract. They will sign a contract in order to be on a machine that they know is not competitive.
So when your choices are ride this bike and get paid for it or work at AutoZone, you're going to ride that bike and get paid for it.
That's why Colin Edwards got on that Aprilia Cube.
I like AutoZone, by the way. It's just an example.
And AutoZone, if you want to send us
sponsor us, that's good.
Or send us some Hickory Farm baskets. We're good with that.
No. Send us an assortment of oils.
Ooh, and tools.
Tools.
I can use some tools. You know what? Send us a freaking brake bleeder.
Please, a brake bleeder. Just send us a discount.
We gotta do the brake lines on the Bandit.
Air filters and oil filters.
Brake bleeder. Okay. Brake bleeder. We're not doing that again. Anyway, I dig, and you can read all about that in Road Racing World magazine. So yeah, you get paid every now and then. The pro racer gets paid to ride a bike that's not competitive. But I want to spare a thought for Marco Melendri. We laughed at Ducati and we laughed at Marco because back in his GP career, when the Ducati was an ill-handling beast that nobody could ride, Ducati allegedly actually sent Marco for psychological counseling because riding the bike was apparently a quite depressing and terrifying experience. But, you know, his last tweet after the Sepang 2 tests, Moto preseason tests and MotoGP, were, I cannot ride this bike. I can't, no, actually he said, I cannot ride. And that's the
sign. So are we talking about the Ducati or the...
He's on the Aprilia now.
Now, we're talking about now.
Right.
Right.
And he wound up in a place that he didn't want to be. Aprilia last season at the end of World Superbike, where he was racing, said, we're backing out of World Superbikes. We're going to go into MotoGP a year early. You're not going to be competitive, but, you know, it's a learning year, you know. And then what happened around the first of the year was Aprilia made two realizations. One, our MotoGP bike is worse than we thought. Number two, we have a chance in World Superbike that we didn't think we had. Now, by this point, they pulled their factory support. The only people in Aprilias are on a couple of satellite bikes and are not getting paid nearly as much.
Pulled their sack factory support in World Superbike.
World Superbike, yeah. Right. And those two guys are not getting paid what the factory guys were getting paid last year. But the factory's like, we can't have two bikes that suck. We can't get beaten, and we're going to get beaten bad in MotoGP. They started giving some support back to the satellite, and turns out that bike in World Superbike is a fucking rocket. It came within, 0.036 seconds of winning both races at Phillip Island. And Marco's like, that could have been my ride. I could be winning races. And meanwhile, I think he finished in Sepang 4 seconds off the pace.
So similar to Crutchrow last year, took the Ducati deal, and then when he got on the bike, he was like, oh, this is worse than I thought.
Christ.
And the money's not making up
the
for it.
The money's not making up for it.
So he was able to eject
from
that deal, and now he's happy on a Honda.
Yeah. And the thing about Crutchlow is that he's still young enough and he's on a good satellite ride. He's not going to win any races, but he's got a shot at being on the podium on a Honda, on a track
so
that really favors a Honda.
He's back where he was with Yamaha before he went to
Ducati.
Right,
realizing that maybe the grass wasn't greener on the other side.
So the point here is that when you're watching some guy and his results aren't great, it's not necessarily that the rider's got his head up his butt.
Right.
It's, as we've said many times, it's a whole big team thing.
Yeah.
It's not just you driving to the racetrack with your 600, right? And you're responsible for everything.
Right.
There's stuff that the rider can't control.
And
now,
sometimes the pro knows that and they sign anyway because their level of success, their definition of success is, did I get paid to show up here today?
Well, yeah. At some point, it's really nice to make a profit racing.
It's nice to have a job.
In the beginning, we're all like, oh, you mean I can race and I don't have to pay for it? That's a huge improvement over what I had, right?
Right.
And then when you're like, oh, I can make money to like secure for the rest of my life, you're going to take that deal.
Let me say one more thing about Marco. He's towards the end of his career.
It's not as good of a position. Yeah.
Having a bad season now makes it that
much harder. A career is a lot longer than it used to be.
Thankfully, but who's going to hire? If he's going to finish, I mean, they run the risk on that Aprilia MotoGP bike of finishing last. Carol Abraham in every race. How's he going to get a ride next year?
That may be true, but at the same time, it's also as any situation. One door closes, many more open. Make it into the opportunity that it could be, right? In a way, you can force the factory to put more resources into it by having the kind of effort that's like, wow, it's clear that the rider is faster than our bike, You can try to, because if you just go half step it, then they're going to go, yeah, that's what we expected, and they're not going to,
Okay.
But if you put in your best effort, and what else can you do? You can only do the best you can all the time. Nobody's going to have respect for anybody who does their job poorly. You don't want fries with that order, sir. Or would you like some fries with that order, sir? Right? I mean,
right?
It matters. You can go places with the thing. And I kind of like this situation, right? When I ride my 88 Hurricane against, right?
I know where you're
and
going.
And I win, I'm right. a stud.
Right?
And when I lose, dude, I was riding an 88 Hurricane. What did you expect? I'm protected.
The MZ Scorpion was the best track day bike ever. It was, I told Cody, who's got one, Cody Burton, my friend, it was the greatest ego protection device known to mankind.
Exactly. Yeah.
When I rode around you, you sucked. When you rode around me, what'd you expect? I'm on a 43 horsepower bike that's got a dirt quad single, you know? It was great.
Never piss off the old fast guy on the shitty bike, because he can make you look really bad.
Exactly, you know? So, it'll be good. Hey, I'll wrap this up with this one last thought. Leon Haslam has not won a World Superbike race since 2010. He's been riding for Pata Honda, which puts together a B-plus bike every year, but puts together an A-plus program in terms of actually paying people on time. He's done what a professional racer does. He's gotten a check. He's put together a life, you know, based on his career. Last year, he took a pay cut and went to the Red Devils Roma team. And he said, I don't need the money anymore. I'm set. I need a bike that can win me a championship. And it was damn nice to see him win his first race at 5 freaking years at Phillip Island. I am Michael Gugis.
I am Ed Sorbo.
Aloha, mofo.